Hello, and welcome to Pod Sing Say, an Avatar The Last Airbender podcast, where every week we watch an episode of Avatar and discuss it. I'm your host, Nicole, here with my co-hosts, Jen, Steph, and Abby, and this week we will be talking about Book 3, Chapter 9, Nightmares and Daydreams. In this episode, Aang's anxiety over the upcoming invasion and his extremely daunting responsibility of defeating Fire Lord Ozai despite being a 13-year-old and not yet a fully realized avatar results in nightmare-fueled insomnia, which soon leads to hallucination-esque daydreams. After 4 days of panic, the rest of the gang finally manages to pep-talk him into letting go before facing the invasion. Meanwhile, Zuko is enjoying his restored princely status, being attended to by servants and fawned over by the public. Even cuddling with his girlfriend can't stop him from fretting over an upcoming war meeting, which he finally attends and comes out of with the realization that he can wear the mask of the perfect Fire Prince, but it isn't true to his heart. So, in the summary just now, I mentioned that the title, as it sort of literally applies to Aang's plotline. But the way that I usually think about the title of this episode is in reference to both Aang and Zuko. You know, because they sort of start out at opposite ends of the spectrum in this episode and then cross over. Like, Aang is obviously having loads of nightmares, but finally he gets to an okay place. And Zuko starts out living this almost too pleasant life. And then he gets more disquieted as time goes on, finally realizing that this life isn't really right for him. Hmm. You know, they both sort of go through these turbulent emotions before winding up in, like, a sort of calm day before the invasion. But it's, like, the kind of calm where you know that you've reached the point where there's nothing else to do, nothing else to be done. Either for Aang, like, literally, physically, he's trained all he can to this point. And for Zuko, it's more sort of like a spiritually, metaphorically kind of can't do anything else because he is very much this character of action. And now that he's come to this realization, he like can't just sit on it. Even though like our honor count doesn't increase this episode, it's sort of like on his honor, Zuko has to act now. He can't do anything else. So that's how I feel about that.
All right, let's end the episode. Great job, Nicole.
Yeah, I hit the nail on the head. It was kind of just like Zuko had inklings, but it really just needed I think that was the final push to be in the meeting. It's like, you know what? This really was all it, and I'm still feeling kind of weird about it.
Yeah.
So I guess that is not what I was looking for, and that's a really weird realization to come to.
Hell yeah. Like, the two extremes.
Yeah. And I feel like it's like he's realizing that this like idealized life that he had in mind, like his goal, like doesn't really exist. Like he was imagining, I want things to go back to how they were before, but like the how they were was never real. Like maybe he was just too young to like fully realize it before, but it's like everything that he's been dreaming about is just stuff he's kind of made up in his head, like how he would feel to have his dad's approval. But you know, he realizes, I mean, he literally says it where he's like, I acted like the son that my father always wanted, but it's not me. And like, I feel like that is a really tough thing to have to learn, that like, you can't really be yourself and also have these things that you want. Like, there's like that disconnect between.
You're like giving me anxiety because I'm like, you just described adulthood like to a T, honestly. Like, I feel like that's like a thing that I've been dealing with a lot, even like as someone who, you know, to someone younger, like as like a 31-year-old, you know, there's certain milestones you expect to hit and there's a certain life that you imagined for yourself. And I remember kids, like friends and stuff being like, if I'm not married by 30, like making pacts with their friends to be like, let's get married so that we're not sad and alone. And it's just like, that's not accurate to anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you are married, but.
It's like, you know, marriage is like, you can take it or leave it. And it's like, that sounds really heartless. And I don't mean that, like, I don't love my husband.
Like, but, like, he's literally sitting right behind you.
I'm okay with that. And he's okay with that too, you know? But I feel like that's just like, you know, marriage is just a piece of paper. It doesn't change, like, what we already decided for ourselves. It was more just like, might as well get the tax benefits, right? You know? And, like, all the Like, it was literally just, like, make it official and, like, get the benefits in case something happens or whatever.
Right.
But, like, yeah. But I feel like even beyond that, it's just, like, the idea of, like, owning a house and all this other shit. And, like, you know, there's a, you know, we're all millennials and there's that whole thing of like, being promised a certain thing if you did certain things and then coming out the other side. And a lot of those things, like, are inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, so hearing you talk about it just made me think about that, where it's just, like, yeah, like, Zuko had these, like, grand, like, he imagined what the war room was like, and you could argue that that's even what got him shot in the foot in the first place when he mm-hmm. first went into the war room as a kid, was he was just, like, no, like, this is a room where we're all, like, impassioned, and we're doing these things for our countrymen, and, like, we're protecting our soldiers, and, like, they're not pawns, like, they're citizens, and they're good people, and like, he has to learn the reality is that it's a lot more cutthroat and, like, right. manipulative, and bureaucratic and whatnot. And I'm sure that's, like, not, you know, it's all, like, tough pills he has to keep swallowing kind of yeah. thing.
He was always just, like, too soft, I think, for, like,
yeah.
what the Fire Nation requires and, like, what his dad requires.
Avatar The Last Airbender, a coming-of-age story.
It really is, though.
Yeah. It does make you think about, like, it is kind of crazy how much you can really... what is the word, like, connect to your own, like, adult life from the show, because it is, you know, the target audience is, like, tweens,
yeah,
but you can still get so much out of it mm-hmm. even watching it as an adult, right. Like, I was, I guess, technically right. like, even when it first came out, I guess we were technically a little older than the target audience because we mm-hmm. were, like, junior, senior in high school.
Yeah, it was the kind of thing that you, like, didn't actively tell your other friends about.
Right.
You still watch cartoons?
Honestly, I got that so much of my life. And then I fucking went into, I, like, majored in cartoons, basically. It's just like, nope, she didn't grow out of it. It wasn't a yeah. phase, Mom. Like,
that's, like, I always feel like I had to, like, justify why I knew about certain things. Like, I'd be like, my brother's younger than me, or, like, I have young yeah. cousins, so when I babysit them, I watch it. But, like, I actually did like it myself, like, some yeah. of the cartoons. And, like, I babysit my cousin's kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really into Miraculous Ladybug,
mm-hmm.
which I'm, like, a little embarrassed to, like, admit to people, because I'm like, it's literally for children and I'm 30.
It's but, like, honestly, it's got solid camera work, I'll give it that.
It's a good show.
Yeah.
But what was the funniest was that my cousin and his wife were both like, yeah, we knew you'd like it. When they came home, because, like, I put the kids to bed and then I just kept it on because they had yeah. it on Netflix, and I was just watching it when they came home, and they're like, you left this on the whole time.
Attacked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember always being like that. I feel like this episode, too, especially, like, the whole, like, adult thing made me laugh and cringe, because it was, like, dealing with stress is not something that you're taught, really, as a kid. Mm-mm. At least, like, for a lot That's of true. American kids.
Even as an yeah. adult.
Yeah.
Yeah. How to, like, mitigate intrusive thoughts and anxiety and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I feel like those conversations are only happening now, to the point where, like, it was, like, funny to me and also disheartening that, I'm sorry, I'm, like, jumping around, but it's, like, that, like, Sokka... It, like, the stereotype of him, like, him impersonating a therapist, you know, like, around, like, right. wow, like, this is so dated.
Yeah,
right. That was, like, the persona that he donned for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, like, faulting it, but it was just, mm-hmm. like, oh, like, that's how much time has passed, like, in terms of, like, conversations like that.
Right. But even considering, like, how kind of stereotypical his depiction was and, like, dated it was, it kind of is impressive that they talked about so many different, like, yeah. stress management strategies,
mm-hmm.
like therapy, yoga,
yeah.
massage, acupuncture, even though, yeah, like, you yeah, know, yeah. They're all, like, jokes and, like, gags. But, you know, I was like, oh, they actually are, like, talking about mental health and how important sleep is, because it is important.
Right.
I was like, oh, a lot of this is, like, way too real. Like, I've never had that kind of, like, stress dream like Aang was having. But I have mm-hmm. had stress dreams. Not, like, mm-hmm. ridiculous. Like, I'm not wearing my mm-hmm. pants. But, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I did have a stress dream somewhat recently, even though, you know, we've been out of school forever, but I had a dream that I had, like, essays due and that I was going to, like, fail my class, because it was, like, I was stressed about other things, but it manifested as, like, that very familiar school deadline stress.
Yeah, I forgot about the math test. It's so relatable.
Yeah. I woke up, honestly, I was, like, panicked. I was like, oh my god, I have to write the essay. And then I was like, yeah. I'm, like, 30. I haven't been in school
yeah.
for years.
Like, our 10-year yeah. anniversary is coming up of, like, graduating. And, like, that's wild. But, like, yeah, that. Honestly, like, the first thing that I thought of when one of you was talking about Like, you know, it's like you get to a point where there's nothing else you could do. Like, the first and only thing I could think of as the example of that is, like, then you just go take your test. Like, you do the final.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Honestly, same. I was thinking that the entire episode.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, like, you studied, like, you try to sleep, whatever, and, like, then you just go take it. And it's like, yeah, I don't have, like, an adult equivalent. I feel like my issue is just, like, I mean, it's the same issue with Aang, where it's, like, especially during the pandemic, like, my sleep schedule is completely fucked. Because it's, like, there's just so much to stress about on, like, the macro level and, like, the micro level. And, like, just, like, there's no break at any tier of society, like, you try to access. So right. For me, like, sleep has been, like, the worst. And, like, therapy only helps so much. And, like, yeah, where it's, like, oh, like, I know for me, like, the proper answer is kind of what Aang was trying to do, which is kind of, like, work it out, like, physically. But I hate exercise, so what's a girl to do?
Oh man,
that's not fun.
No,
but I know, like, it's good for you, you know. I know, like, allegedly, you know, there's science behind this kind of stuff, but
no, I feel like I'm always hearing that they're like, yeah, endorphins go, yeah, like, get the runner's high, and I'm like,
don't know, no. No.
Oh my god, I'm not gonna, I've tried to get into running and no one has ever sold it to me. It's like, it's gonna be so shitty, and then one day it'll not be shitty, and I'm not That's willing to put in that amount of work.
Everybody always says, yeah, they're like, one day you'll just, like, you'll really love it. I'm like, but I'm like, that's the same shit people say about, like, beer and, like, I don't know, what are those other, like,
that's so true about beer.
I'm like, I'm not gonna, like, fake, like, trick myself into liking something.
Yeah. I'm not, like, interested. It's an acquired taste. I'm just like, shouldn't it taste good to begin with? Like,
yeah. I don't want to acquire it.
Right. That's so funny. Yeah.
Like, I used to meditate in high school and then I stopped. And then I did it a couple times in college, or I would go with Kelly actually to the spiritual center or whatever. And then I stopped. And then nowadays I, like, can't even, like, jokingly indulge in it, because it's like my issue as an adult now is just, like, intrusive thoughts that, like, just spiral, and it's like I didn't have that back then, so maybe I could, like, handle it more, but nowadays it's like I need things to distract me from my brain, and, like, meditation is not that. And I've gotten into, like, legitimate fights with Miko about that form of, like, coping, because it's like, you know, it's again, it's like, oh, the science is there, like, even meditating for, like, 15 minutes a day is good for you, and it's like, that doesn't apply to everybody. And, like, you know, it's just like, oh, but if you do it enough, it'll, like, eventually work. And I'm like, I don't know if that's true. Oh, I don't want to find out.
That's exactly my problem with the whole, like, exercising to feel better thing. Because honestly, every time that I exercise, I start spiraling and get, like, and start having some major, like, anxiety problems. It's terrible.
And it's like, yeah, and it's like, logically, you know that, like, the way out of that is, like, to push through. And, like, that all of these things do require, like, a big upfront investment. But, like, we're not really, like, taught how to deal with, like, I don't know how to deal with that. Mm. Like, you know, that's the whole reason, like, everyone's New Year's resolutions die, like, by February and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I think that's one thing that I did like about this episode is that everything, you know, I know everything was in a joking way where Aang wasn't really resonating with any of the methods he was trying, but that's normal. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of times, because there's that thing that we have to push through, but no one really talks about that that's something you have to do, I feel like, for me personally, I blame myself for not catching on to it. And I think that just escalates the stress and anxiety that you feel even more, because now it's like, oh, this is the thing that everyone said would make me feel better, but now it's not, and now nothing works because I'm a shitty person and this is why I'm in the state that I'm in. And it's just this never-ending cycle.
My friend, like, we were talking about something different the other day, but she mentioned how, you know, it's like the hard part that nobody wants to see, like, the actual, like, shitty work you have to do, the bitter work you have to do, is like, she's like, that's the part in every film that gets, like, cut down to, like, a quick montage, because nobody wants to see the hard work. True. People just want to see the before and the after. And it's like, I feel like that's such a big part of it, is like, we don't normalize the shitty perseverance that you need, like, to do anything that's worth doing.
Right.
And I was like, I felt attacked.
You never get to see the actual process.
And I felt like there was, like, an interesting progression in this episode with, like, Aang's dreams. where mm-hmm. I liked how, like, they kind of started really, like, they were presented as really, really comical. And then, like, the very, like, not the very last one, but the last one he had, mm-hmm. like, there was one he had where it was almost, like, more of, like, an actually scary nightmare right, where, like, yeah. you know, Toph didn't have eyes and like, he imagined them all, like, dying. Mm-hmm. And so I liked how it went from being presented as kind of like comical to like being a very legitimate concern.
Right.
And I feel like the important thing that kind of was lost was that it was always like very valid, even from that first jokey dream. Mm-hmm. But I feel mm-hmm. like they like handled it as well as they probably could for back then. And also just like, I don't think they like mishandled it either.
Right.
Because like his friends were concerned about him the whole time. They tried to help. They tried a bunch of different stuff. And, like, eventually they kind of figured something out, or, like, a temporary solution was just, like, sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, like, yeah, it was, like, scary to see, like, that one dream was, like, super fucked up. And I like that they had, like, one of them at least have, like, that kind of edge.
Right.
As much as I liked all, like, the anime and, like, wuxia references or whatever.
Yeah. Gosh, there were so many references.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Those were so funny.
I had such a fun time deciding like what to do for this episode and like what references to make, and I don't know,
so much.
Yeah,
so many outfits.
Appa versus Momo fight.
Oh my god, the like Usagi Yojimbo Momo like samurai.
Oh my,
just like
god.
Iconic.
Oh my god. And then like Momo just talking.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them just talking, like, this episode's so good.
Oh my god, when yeah. talking Appa told Momo that he was like, I'm sick of this guy always mouthing off and telling me what to do, and all I could think about was all the times that Momo has like taken Appa's food.
True.
Like just last episode, Momo literally took a melon out of Appa's mouth.
Like, yeah, like he like made him spit it out, little chump. I, like, have the art book open, and I'm just looking at all the Aangs, and I'm just, like,
yeah,
apparently like, these were all designed by one person, which is also, like, I'm, like, okay, well, this is clearly, like, the nerdiest fucking person on the team. Yeah. Ethan Spaulding. Yeah, but there's, like, a Chinese, like, wuxia, like, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon kind of Aang with, like, the long hair and, like, the long sword, and there's kind of, like, I guess he's, like, Dragon Ball Z kind of Aang.
Mm-hmm. He was really Dragon Ball Z, the first one. And then the second yeah. one was, like, Vash the Stampede.
Yeah,
right?
That was the most obvious yeah. reference to me.
And then the one with all yeah. the chains, I was, like, Digimon? But, like, obviously no, but, like...
Yeah, what was that a reference? I looked it up.
Vash the Stampede from
Trigun,
right?
It was an animation
I'd
never heard of.
Oh, it was... Yes. Okay, I see it now.
Oh.
I love that okay. he did have, like, the high collar, too, because that's such, like, a classic anime trick to avoid having to, like, do extra animation on the mouth.
But then they also have all these other little references. Like, he did, like, the Naruto Ninja Run, and he yeah. did, like, fight moves that were, like, from Furikuri, like...
Oh, my God.
There were a bunch of them. There was a bunch of stuff I was, like, seeing... Looking up some of them. It's like Samurai Champloo, Star Wars, yeah. like Afro Samurai, Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
Like
oh yeah, and then like the whole showdown with like Momo and Appa as like the wandering samurai and like the armored samurai was just like they had like the dramatic like the cherry blossoms, like all that shit. So fucking funny. And like the yeah, just like the cameras, the shots and everything. And it's like I'm surprised it all came from one person, mostly because you'd think on like a show like this, so much of it had to be influenced by Asian cartoons and whatnot. Mm. That it's like there should be more. But I guess there's also just if one person really just like hits it like the nail on the head.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even like Ozai's costumes were really funny and like the way mm-hmm. he like changed shape.
Yeah. For 1 second I was like, why does he know what he looks like? And then I remembered that he went to school and there were portraits of Ozai everywhere.
He made a noodle portrait.
Which we got to see again in this episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for a second I was like, why does he know what he looks like? And I was like, oh yeah, because this country is insane.
Why was it the same voice actor?
Mm-hmm. Well. Mark Hamill. What were you doing, Mark Hamill?
Having a good time. My royal parts are showing.
I was about to say, could you imagine like voicing that my royal parts?
My royal parts. Oh my god. Oh. My favorite shot of this whole episode is like there's like a wide shot of all the characters. Like Aang is facing away from us and all the other characters are facing him, and then like Appa's just standing upright.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like played so straight. No. It's just the funniest. Yes. I just want that picture. I want that framed. Like
spoiler alert for the end of our podcast episode, that is my favorite moment. I made it a shout out. Not yeah. my favorite, what I was choosing.
Oh my god. Just like, yeah, I just, that image with no context is just like, iconic.
Oh, I was going to say that on a slightly more serious note, like you were saying, Jen, about the nightmares and appreciating that last one.
Mm-hmm. You know, and also the fact when he was just talking about his nightmares, the ones that weren't shown, and those all also involved his friends getting hurt in some way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, wow, I really like this, that his nightmares are very much about his friends getting hurt and Aang not being able to save them. And especially in the one we saw, specifically, he got, like, encased in ice or blocked by ice from being able to act, which is considering that the dream opened with the reference to the storm where he, you know, froze in ice for 100 years and wasn't there to help anybody. Like, ooh, there's that guilt complex.
There's that PTSD.
Throwing a little of the Katara plus fire. He has guilt about that, too, you know.
Yeah.
And then he's just, like, standing there watching while the world blows up. I was like, oh, boy. Yeah.
I feel like I definitely, like, didn't pick up on, like, these as a younger person. I understood, like, what this episode was about. But, I didn't know that, like, what PTSD was. I don't know how, maybe I was in college when I first heard that term or something. But it's, like, now rewatching it, it's, like, not fun. It's, like, the wrong word. But it's, like, it's fun to see, like, that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's fun to see Aang's PTSD, guys.
It's, like, that much more impactful than what I know. You know,
because there were like other episodes where I feel like as a kid, it kind of just like washed over me and I was like, oh, he's having a rough time. And I didn't really like dwell on it the way that I did now.
Right.
Even though I'm always like going on about how he's just like my poor child.
And it was so rough, too, because it's like I appreciate Sokka and Katara and Toph's like persistence in trying to like help him get over it. But the things that they say were also so dismissive, too. It's kind of like, hey guys, the invasion's in 4 days, and like the weight of what that means doesn't really mean anything to the rest of them because they don't know. So they're like, no, you're fine and you're ready. And it's like, no matter what you say, it's not going to help. But it's kind of like, what's the balance of like comforting someone who's experiencing this? And like, they don't even know. So it's kind of like, I don't know, if I was Aang, I'd want to hear more, but I can't even articulate what I want to hear. So, I don't know. If I was in a bad mood, I'd feel like that would sound almost dismissive. Yeah. It's kind of like, no, you're ready. You got this. And it's like, I don't got this. That's why I'm freaking out.
Yeah. And like when Katara's like, go to sleep. And I'm like, he literally can't. Like, he literally just told you that he can't.
Exactly.
And
Stephanie, have you tried not being sad?
Yes. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
No, like, you know, because you think about it and you're like, oh, they're also kids and they don't really know. They probably don't know what they should, what's like the best thing to do. I don't even know what would be the best thing to do in that situation. But like, just being like, it's in 4 days. That's not a big deal. It's 4 days away. Like, that's not helpful in any way.
Yeah, you're just setting it up to like get worse as each day passes. Not for nothing, I kind of feel like Katara and Sokka also should have shown a little bit of like that anxiety. I feel like Sokka, like I wanted to see that from him a little bit too, because it's like he's like led military plans and strikes before, but obviously this is supposed to be like the big be all end all be all. I don't know, whatever.
End all be all.
And he's like absurdly calm about it, and I'm like, but this is like the big, this is supposed to be like the show's supposed to end because this is supposed to work, you know, kind of thing. And he's like, super calm. And I'm just like, they should all be anxious because they've never been in a direct, never like gone looking for a fight.
Yeah.
The fight always comes to them, kind of thing.
That's true. I didn't really think about that. But now that you say it, it's a little strange that nobody else felt any sort of anxiety about it.
Yeah. I feel like Toph would be like fine because she's just like, I'm going to be fine because I'm going to be fine. Like, you know,
she was like, right. I forgot you were soft. Like, I was like, Toph, I love you so much.
Oh my God. You know, sometimes you do just need that friend with the tough love. I'm not even going to lie.
But it's like, yeah, it's true.
I guess like it's, but that's, I feel like that's it actually, where it's like Sokka and Katara were trying to be like the soft friends that he needed, but like they didn't know how to. And it's like, they both have their own shit. And it's like, that doesn't mean that they know how to deal with it when someone else is like going through it.
Right.
Yeah. I did think it was like weird that I actually noted it, like how crazy it was that Aang was freaking out and Sokka was like, chillax. Mm-hmm. Although there was a little later on, there was that moment, which I kind of, when Sokka was just kind of like, yeah, I know, it makes sense that you're freaking out because this is an extremely, like, horrible burden. That's right. Like, he was just very,
like,
Sokka, you're not helping.
Yeah.
And I was like, while you are right that he's not helping, at the same time, I'm like, I see where he's coming from by being like, well, what? It's true. That's the deal. He knows it. If like ignoring the problem isn't going to make it go away, pretending that the situation is not as stressful as it is definitely only something that's going to make your anxiety spike higher. Because then you're like, right. Why isn't everyone else freaking out? Yeah. Why don't you seem to realize that this is a big deal?
Yeah. Like, I feel like that part accidentally annoyed me because I felt like that was like the most solid piece of advice that Sokka gave. And I was just like, that needed to be what you said to him when you were like being a charlatan therapist. Like, that's the actual thing the therapist would say.
Put not the like, beard back on and say it again.
Yeah. Like, I was just like, that's what you needed to say when you were actually trying to say the right thing. Yeah. Pain in the ass. I can't even remember, like, what he actually said to Aang when he was pretending to be the therapist.
It was just, it was all the stuff that I would have done if I was pretending to be a therapist as a joke.
Yeah.
It was just like, and how does that make you feel?
Yeah.
He was like, so why are you so stressed out? Well, why does that stress you out?
Yeah. Well, tell me more about this Ozai. Who is that?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. To be fair, I guess that's how a lot of those conversations actually do start in therapy. But it's like, again, like, it's just such, it's so dated where it's like, yeah, then like the practical thing that he said that like isn't as like soft. And, you know, it's just like, he knows the deal. It's just like, yeah, I feel like for me, that sounds like a thing my therapist would say to me where she's just like, yeah, well, you know, you have to deal with this. And I'm just like, fuck you. Like, I know. Like, I don't want to. That's the problem.
Right. That shit's hard. It's like, oh my God. I know that like taking a test versus like the end of the world is not the same thing, but there's always that person where it's like, I'm freaking out about the test. And then everyone else who also didn't study the same way I did, they're like way more chill about it. Cause it's like, it doesn't matter how much, you know, we did the best that we can type of deal. So that was my impression that they're just like, it is what it is. Like you can't develop these skills in the 4 days or in the 24 hours leading up to the test. So that's something that I just learned how to deal with. It's like, I can't let the stress get to me because that's not going to change the outcome of what it is. Just do the best that you can.
If anything, it's going to make you do worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Because you get in your own head about it.
Like the most relevant thing for me that I can think of, it's like sometimes I interview filmmakers, animation directors. I get like really nervous. Like the big one for me was like, I interviewed Glenn Keane, who's like, it's Glenn Keane. Look him up if you don't know who he is. But also, how dare you not know who he is? And like, yeah, it's like I can prep and I can read interviews about these people and I watch the film a couple times and like I take notes and I review stuff and I read other interviews with them and I make sure I try to come up with like different questions and like, you know, whatever. And they always end up going pretty okay, in my opinion. But I cannot stop the like physical reaction. Like I can't do anything. If that interview's at like 3 p.m., I am like a useless vegetable like the entire day before and like the day of. And then I do it and then it's fine. And then I'm like sweating bullets and it's like just I can't, there's like nothing. And it's like logically I know everything. Like I'm like, it's probably going to be fine. Even if it's bad, it's like, it's still going to be something. And it's like, yeah, I can't shut off like the physical reaction. Right. And it's like all the therapy speak, it's just like, well, if when you realize it's happening, like you need to do stuff to stop it and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, no, it's
doesn't not work that I like
don't,
that.
Yeah. It's like, it's not like I don't want to.
Right.
It's like, you easier think I don't know done. When I'm being crazy?
Yeah. Like, honestly. Oh, that's so true.
Like, I can tell when I'm panicking more than is necessary about something.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I can turn it off.
Yeah, it's like the issue is I'm refusing to do anything about it. Like, knowingly. Yeah. Well, at least that's on my end. It's like, no, I'm going to wallow in it.
For me, I feel like my coping strategies are just, like, not, again, like, not healthy. Because it's like, oh, yeah, like, exercise? No. Like, meditation doesn't do shit for me. If I try to read, then I'll end up just, like, I'll end up reading like the same paragraph 4 times and not retaining anything. If I watch a movie or something, I'll like end up on my phone because I'm anxious and I want to do something with my hands. And then I'm like on a screen and then I'm not paying attention to like anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, yeah, there's nothing. Yeah. Everything's awful.
Yep.
Wait, so how do we cope with stress then?
I don't think we're the right people to answer that.
No, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. It's more just like, how do we individually deal with it?
I don't have good coping strategies because I tend to just kind of like ignore the problem until it's, and I've always been this way. I ignore the problem until it literally can't be ignored anymore. And then I take care of it. Like, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, I don't know, essay writing. Like, that is, I mentioned before, like, I would get really stressed about it, but I had, like, a very bad habit of always waiting until literally the last, like, 24 hours to write any papers or, like, prepare for a presentation or whatever. Like, I always put things off, even though I knew I had to do them. And anytime I thought about having to do them, I'd get that, like, sick stress feeling.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, I'll do it later. And then I distract myself with other things until I literally can't anymore. Like, when we were in college, one time, it was like finals and I taught myself how to read and write Korean instead of preparing for my exams.
I remember that.
Yeah. Cause like I didn't want to have to think about the things that were actually stressing me out. So I know that that's not healthy and I am trying to work on it now.
Yeah.
Where like if I have things that I know I need to do, I've started doing like a lot of to-do lists because then I get like that little like spike of endorphins when I like get to check something off.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have good advice or like any kind of example for how I deal with stress because I just avoid.
Yeah. I've been reading more about like self-sabotage because I realized like that's what I do where it's like I was always that kid in college that like the opposite of Stephanie where it's like, oh, I have an essay due in 2 weeks and I would like have the outline done by like this day and like, you know, and I would have it like done by a certain amount of time. But then I would like just like let it would like linger too long. And then I would start to be like, this is actually terrible. I should start over. And then I'd start like half outlining a brand new essay like 2 days before it starts and wanting to redo the whole project or whatever it is. And then like, you know, something would give and I would like either turn in like the shitty one and then I would like sheepishly show the teacher the other one, you know, whatever, something like there was always something where it was just like you were fine and like you didn't trust your instincts kind of thing.
You know what my advisor said to me in college once that I've never been able to forget? She said, you are too afraid of doing poorly at something that you just don't do it.
Yeah.
Or you create a situation where what you end up creating is literally like you didn't have a choice, like it was at the last minute, like this is what it is, because then it's like avoiding taking responsibility for the actual quality of what you're putting out.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know, but like, I know, I was like that? I don't like how well I'm being perceived at this moment. I mean, full disclosure, I did really poorly my sophomore year of college, like really bad. I had to do an extra semester. Like I graduated with like a B minus, like whatever. I don't remember what GPAs are, but it was like a B minus. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do like horrible in school, but like I really, like I, you know, she was right. Like I was afraid to try because then what if I tried and it wasn't good?
Yeah. I'm still like that.
Yeah. Like I'm like, if I put the effort in and then it's not what I want it to be or I still do badly, I can't handle that. Like I don't like not being good at things. You know? Yeah, I need to go to therapy.
Nothing wrong with that. Putting it off.
Yeah, I keep putting it off. Like it's something that I've been thinking about for a while. And then I'm like, do I have ADD or ADHD? Maybe.
Oh, that's one of those things where I keep seeing posts about it and relating really hard to them and then being like, shit, wait, no, 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 babe, no.
I know. You know what it kind of makes me think of? There was I don't remember where I read it or who said it. Maybe it was on Twitter or something, but someone was like, you know, they were equating this to something else, like how people think, oh, once you get to a certain point, you just don't have to do something anymore. But they were like, you know, I had dandruff, so I started using Head and Shoulders, and then my dandruff stopped. So I was like, okay, I don't need to use this anymore. And then I stopped using Head and Shoulders, and my dandruff came back. Where it's kind of like the what you're doing to help yourself is working, and then you don't have the problem anymore. But it's because you're still using those like strategies or like the medicine or going to therapy or whatever. Like if you stop doing that, like there's never a point where you're like, I just don't need this anymore, because you don't have the negative symptoms because what you're doing is working.
Yeah. That's like when Miko and I talk about it, like the phrase he always uses with me is that like, I'm not even at like a baseline level of like, quote, normal. And I feel like to your point, that just kind of made me realize like, it's like right now we're working to try to get me to like a stable, like a baseline. And everything after that would arguably be preventative care, like kind of thing moving forward. I feel like that's a good way to put it too. Cause it's like, I'll have, like, he's someone who he's like, I don't need therapy. Like, I'm fine. And like, honestly, as much as I do think that everybody would benefit from it, I like would kind of agree with him, but I feel like thinking about it like that as like preventative care would be good. You know, like he is obnoxious because like it just like passes through. It's like the Bruce Lee, like the be like water. Like he's like that. And that sounds like a stereotype and I don't mean it to be. But like
I hate people like that.
Honestly, like yeah, I feel like when you all met him,
I hate you.
Yeah. No. He can't hear you. But yeah, I feel like when you guys all met him, like we were all just kinda like, this is what like a person without mental health issues is like? Like they're real? Like he's a unicorn.
No,
like,
I did not think that because I assumed that he, like all normal people, had mental health issues. And yeah. It wasn't until later, much later, that you were like, no, he's fine. I was like, you're lying. There's no way. I was like, not even imposter syndrome, come on. But, I mean, yeah, so, stress, even though you guys were talking about stress in terms of, like, things that you would do, like, essays, I guess for me, nowadays, when I think about stress, the stress that's more relevant to me is, like, closer to what you were talking about, we're at work, where, like, stuff will happen, and I'll stress about things, like, if I make a mistake. I stress, if it's something I can fix, I stress more about whether or not I have to bring the fact that I made the mistake in the first place to somebody else's attention. Mm. If I can fix it without anyone knowing, I'm good. Like,
same.
But, and I'm, what do I do? What do I do? Do I just stick with it the way it is? Or do I just redo it? Or do I, this one's going to take this much time? It's like a lot of, And I am not unaware that it is probably not a coincidence that a lot of my stress tends to come from other people perceiving me and knowing that I am a fuck up. Like, you know, in general,
right.
I don't. Let me get back to the point, which was, how do I deal with it? Okay. Well, normally what would happen is I get kind of anxious about something. And then I try to be like, okay, I'm not going to freak out about this. I'm just going to, like, here's what I have to do. Because I do a lot of that, like making plans, very simple plans, where I'll be like, okay, here's the plan. I'm going to walk over there. And then I'm going to pick up that thing. Like, you know, simple attainable goals. Of course, that does backfire sometimes when that gets, like, messed up. And the best way for me to deal with things, honestly, this is going to sound counterintuitive, is like, because my problem is not so much about a thing that I have to do, it's not about an essay I have to write, the problem is just the fact that I'm up in my head about absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. And so the best thing for me to do, basically, is to shut myself off from everything and everyone and to, like, lose myself in something else. I can't do exercise because I'm going to stay stuck in my head. So I have to engage in, like, usually reading something, fictional story, something like that. Television can help, but sometimes if I try to watch television, it's like there's too much light, there's too much noise, I get overwhelmed.
I mean, I feel like it's just a topic that doesn't get talked about a lot, so like, I don't know.
What about you, Abby?
Also, to be fair, it's probably like the first time that we ever articulate it. I don't think that anyone's ever been really directly asked about this, so I think in that time there were a lot of things that I really felt resonated with me. Their stress resonates from things that I have to take care of for myself, and that's usually things that I'm responsible for and no one else is dependent on. I think if there are other people in the picture and I think they're relying on me to do it, I'm more inclined and more likely to just get it done and do it well, just so that I don't get any, like, blame or fault or anything, because I think that that's something that I'm internally trying to always maintain, for whatever reason, just be like, this person who, like, does stuff well, whatever that means. If it's something like cleaning the bathroom, sometimes I wait a very long time until I think something similar to what Stephanie said. You just, like, it just is so shitty to the point where you just have to do it. And no one else is really impacted by it. It's just something that haunts me. And I think ways that isn't healthily dealing with this is just, it just builds up and builds up and builds up, and then you just ignore it. And then I distract myself with, like, making social plans and never saying no, because I feel like that's just an inherent way that I like to avoid things, that I should never, I should deal with it more directly. When it's things related to work, I feel like that's more tied to deadlines. So it's kind of like, if people hold me accountable, I do it. And if it's stress, then I just kind of just, like, get it over with. How do I actually deal with stress? I feel the biggest issues that I work with is like interpersonal relationships kind of stuff. That brings me a lot of anxiety. But what has helped me is talking to other people and kind of parsing through what the situation is. And I talk to a lot of people who do equal parts, like validating that what I'm feeling is normal. I think a lot of that is like having grown up feeling anything is wrong and you should just get over it. But I think through therapy, a lot of processing and explaining how I feel has helped me a lot. So I think talking through it for whatever reason helps me. Maybe that's because therapy helped me. But I also do like, if it's, again, a person I'm having a conflict with, what's helped me also is just like writing down things that I would say. I probably will never, ever say it to them just because I'm conflict avoidant. But writing down the things I would say, I think helps me process in my head if I don't really feel comfortable talking to someone else about it. At least I can put it in words. And I think the moment I put things in words, it becomes a lot more clear because I feel like the anxiety is mostly drawn from keeping it to myself. So I feel like that action of talking to people or writing it down has helped me calm down, at least, because then it puts me in a mental state where I can then take action on it. So that's helped me. And I think routine helps too. I know we've been not talking a lot about how exercise doesn't work. I don't necessarily feel good after exercising. I think as I'm doing it, I'm like, this is so shitty. But I feel like I have a set routine in the day where if I start to stray from it, I think I feel a little bit more anxious or I feel a little bit more lost. So I think adhering to some sort of like normalcy allows me to process more things in my head as if every day was erratic and different. I think I'd be a lot more not able to process stress. So I think creating some sort of systems has helped me deal with it.
No, literally, that's like the same for me, though. Like, I literally will just not clean. Like, that's the problem. I'm like, I won't clean until it's like horrible. And then I'm like, if I had just done like a little bit every day, then it would be fine. But I had to be an asshole and not do anything. Or like, if I know someone's going to come, like, that's why I don't know. I had like that nightmare about someone coming up to my apartment. And I think it was like my anxiety about my parents possibly coming up here and seeing like. How everything is.
I saw a TikTok where it's like, a lot of us are, you know, have trouble cleaning, but now that we're in hot girl summer, there's a new cleaning technique where it's called the he's coming over dash. So you tell so it's like the 20 minutes of when he tells you he's coming over, you just like focus on all the surfaces and then just rearrange all the things that they'd see visibly and then you just deal with the rest of it later.
That was literally me. Anytime anyone came over my apartment in Japan, I was like, oh shit, someone's coming over in like an hour. And then I would make my apartment like look nice on the outside. I mean, I just throw everything in my bedroom and shut the door. Or like I had another study. So like if I knew the person was going to go into my bedroom, I'd like throw, like grab everything, throw it in the closet. Like, you know, and it made it so that like all of my like my supervisors who would come to my apartment anytime I had a problem because like the Board of Ed owned it, the building. They was like, you're so neat and clean. I'm like, yeah, the cleanest.
Oh, my God.
There is no right or wrong answer just because of everyone's own individual unique experiences. Yeah. And just the fact that it's like even difficult to articulate just shows that there's a lot of room to talk about this more. And I think this episode did a good job showing that it doesn't work for everyone and that's okay because not everyone can fucking meditate. Like, I don't know. Then that's fine.
It did a very good job of just showing how stress can affect you mentally. Like, he wasn't able to sleep, which I was like literally always like anytime I get really stressed or just have like a lot going on, I can't sleep very well. So I don't know. It was interesting because I looked on Reddit at the rewatch thread and I didn't read the whole thread today, but a lot of people were like, oh yeah, this episode is like one of the lowest ranked of all the whole show. Like, people don't really like it. I think they were saying on Rotten Tomatoes it's the worst rated of season 3 and like third worst of the whole show. That's interesting. And I mean, people are like, it's filler, and I'm like, like, I don't know. I feel like you could make that argument for, like, most episodes. Like, not, I don't really think anything in this show was, like, purely filler. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like you could make an argument for almost, for most episodes, it's, like, filler, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's at least one person like, oh, well, this is filler on, like, almost every episode. And I'm like, if the whole show is that way, like, is it, though? Like, what, like, at what point is something not? There are also a lot of people who are like, I know that a lot of people don't like this episode, but I love it. And I was like, I'm in that camp where I'm like, I don't understand why people don't like the episode. I don't know.
I can understand where someone would, like, surface level call this filler. And I feel like as a kid, yeah, maybe I would have said that. But I feel like, yeah, that's, like, so disingenuous to, like Zuko's storyline. Like, this is a huge episode for him.
That's true.
And I get, like, nothing big and flashy happened. But this was, like, this was that point we've been waiting for of him. You know, the whole thing we keep saying, as soon as he betrayed Uncle, he was like, maybe that wasn't it. And then this was him still trying to, like, push through that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, make it work and stick with it and try to lean into the royal indulgences and whatever.
Yeah.
And he finally, at the end of this, was just like, fuck, like, this isn't it either. Yeah. Like, now what do I have left? Like, that's fucking huge. And I'm, you know, I'm always looking for a reason to tell Zuko to fuck off. And I'm like, like, y'all are being really rude to him. This is huge.
There was actually one comment that made me crack up because they were like, this episode is the best and I'm about to tell you why. And they just talked about, like, everything with Aang's plot. And then they had one line that was like, there was even some plot development with Zuko or something, if you're into that, but whatever, that's not important. And I was like, did Jen write this? Like,
that's so funny.
And you could just see the discomfort, like, the whole time with him through the whole episode. And just, like, how unused to being, like, pampered he is now. And, like, at the beginning, they're like, can I give you a head massage? Can I wash your feet? Can I? He's like, no. Like, I don't know.
I would love that head massage.
Yeah, so, like, weird. I want a head massage. Like, I also was dying at the palanquin ride.
I've never heard that word said. I would say palanquin.
I know, like, that's how I always said it whenever I would read it. And then the guy was like, you didn't take the palanquin. And I was like, oh, is that the pronunciation? I didn't look it up.
It's Avatar, so what do they know about pronunciation?
Also,
that's true.
True.
But I was just dying at the, like, walk across the street that he wasn't allowed to do on his own feet.
He thinks that he has this great prince life now, but it's like he's still kind of being told what he is and isn't allowed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's also funny because I feel like we've discussed, like, the masculinity toxicity of, like, the Fire Nation. And then, like, he's got a foot washer and, like, a masseuse and, like, he, like, doesn't walk kind of, you know, where it was all of these, like, things that feel, like, very heavily coded as, like, not very masculine. But, like, those are, like, normal things. And I'm like, I was getting a lot of, like, mixed messaging. But I think that's just, like, how I feel about, I don't know, like, royalty and, like, celebrities.
Here's a question. Do people just, like, hang around outside the palace hoping for a glimpse of royal family members and then cheering if they see them? Because it's not like he was going out for an event. So I was like, why are there people there? If you go to
Buckingham Palace, constantly people are just waiting.
Oh.
It also made me think of how, like, people camp outside of, like, K-pop studios, like, hoping, you know? Like,
yeah. Like, that's, like, a celebrity.
Yeah, it's, like, just a celebrity.
So gross.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I'm not famous.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the point of, like, general masculinity and masculine things, but I think that aristocracy and upper class typically bends the rules for that. So I think there's that as well. Like, if you have money, there are no rules for you, so you can do whatever you want. Whereas if someone who was, like, more middle class, if they're, like, getting a pedicure or a manicure, then it's like, oh, are you? And I'm, like, flipping my wrist for people who are, like, listening. But it's just, like, men are not allowed to do that unless you're, like, a certain level of, like,
I feel like that's stature. The thing that's so funny to me, where it's just, like, people, like, not, I don't know why I'm, like, randomly, like, Hugh Jackman, is because he's, like, he's somebody who is, like, perceived very differently.
Hugh Jackman is the epitome of, like, on one hand, he's, like, Wolverine, and on the other hand, he's a Broadway Twinkle Toes.
Yeah, so it's, like, he's such a great example of, like, this weird way that he's presented on, like,
and it has not escaped my notice that when he's portrayed as Wolverine, that's, like, in the men's magazines, and when he's portrayed as, like, wearing an apron and holding a plate of cookies. That's in the woman magazines.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, that's funny to me, too, because it's, like, that's somebody, you know, where I'm sure, like, a lot of men would probably just be like, he's just a rugged, good-looking man. And it's, like...
He's a huge, jacked man.
Like, yeah, stop. He is. But it's... But, you know, it's like that, you know, that bitch has like a lockdown skincare routine, like, you know, and all of these things, like he probably eats a very like plant heavy based diet, like all of these like things that are like not perceived as like manly. And like, those are like the things that keep him fit and like his face so handsome and not youthful. I don't know. He like doesn't look. He looks his age. I don't know what to say. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. He looks good. But it's just funny.
I do think it's interesting that a lot of, like, self-care things are coded as more feminine. Like, skincare and, like, actually doing things with, like, your hair. I mean, I think it's slowly changing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of, it's funny. Like, you see things where you're, like, everybody expects, like, women to put a certain amount of effort into their appearance, but then you don't have the same expectation for men. So you're used to seeing, you know, I mean, this is getting into a whole other topic, but, like, you're used to seeing men with nothing on their face, like, barefaced.
Yeah.
And you're not used to seeing women with no makeup on. So then when, like, I don't know, I follow a lot of, like, subreddits that are, like, men writing women, bad women's anatomy, and like not how girls work, and like stuff like that. And you see a lot of stuff where you like that double standard gets very like, I don't know, hammered in. There was like art of like a female character from a video game. I don't know who or what. I don't pay attention. I don't play video games, so I don't know. But she's just like average looking woman, barefaced. Like she was pretty. But she just looks like a regular person, and they're like, this is why, like, they should have let, like, fans design what the character looks like, and they're like, here's a redesign. It was, like, a completely unrealistic-looking face, and she had, like, a full face of makeup, and it's like, this is taking place in a post-apocalyptic, wow, you know, like, world, like, it doesn't make sense that she would look that way. Like, she looked just normal, and they're like, no woman looks like that, she looks manly. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She just looked like a normal woman. Like, she didn't have the like little triangle shaped chin and, you know, like giant eyes. She just looked like a regular fucking person, and like that kind of thing disgusts me a little bit.
Speaking of disproportionate body parts, Aang's lips when he's imagining kissing Katara.
Oh my god. That was so weird.
Baby, you're my forever girl.
I do actually like that line, though. That's so funny.
It's so funny.
I use that line, like, that's one of those lines that I, like, say, and I'm like, where is that from? And then I'm like,
I say it all the time.
It's like, yeah, you forget the things that you quote. Like, I accidentally quote, like, the Jim Carrey Grinch movie, like, a lot more than I care to admit. There's just a lot of gems
that's
in that
so
movie.
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah, this like, baby, you're my forever girl, but like said really awkwardly, like a 12-year-old. You know?
Oh my god!
How can he be so smooth and then so that?
Yeah. Like, for a second, he
just,
totally
that's just life.
He totally got me though. I knew that that line was in this episode, but for like 1 second, I was like, oh wow, he's like really telling her how he feels. And then when the second they kiss, I went, oh yeah, this isn't real. He's hallucinating.
We're all smoother in our head.
Yeah, you're
but,
right.
But, I mean, his smoother is, like, that's not a smooth line.
Oh, I get, yeah, you're right. Like, I would cringe if someone said that.
Well, it's an improvement from I would rather kiss you than die. Right. So, or, like, I mean, look at Katara's hair. What's up with that?
You're very right. Oh, my God.
I like the sentiment. You're my
forever girl. I know.
That's
like,
very sweet.
It is. It is sweet, but.
But here we are.
Oh, God.
Here we are trying to justify it. You know, it's sweet, but... And then the moment the butt's there, you're done. Like,
it's over. Oh, one other thought I had this episode was I was like, you know, as is on brand for me in season 3, where's the schedule? Show me the schedule. Show me the schedule.
They were four days early. I was wondering.
So, like, what was all that...
I was wondering what they skipped through because they had a lot of time to spend in the other places.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for one of you to bring up the schedule the whole fucking episode.
Everybody was up Katara's ass during the Painted Lady about the schedule, and then no one cared again.
How many side quests did they go on? Sokka
like
getting a
every single
sword.
Episode.
leading up to this has been them taking extra time for a side quest. Everyone. Yeah. None of them kept the schedule.
And they were still 4 days early.
Somehow.
That was literally my first note.
Yeah.
For this episode. Show me the schedule.
I was in waiting all for them.
A lot of it could have even been said to be like at least sort of on their way, but they went out of their way to go to Roku's home for Aang's vision in Avatar and the Fire Lord and then come back and get back on track. Like, and they were still early. I don't even.
4 days.
That's the thing. I think, like, now that I'm thinking back, I'm like, people are just ragging on Katara for doing shit. And this is all just sexist. Like, women aren't allowed to do things that they want to do. And that's probably where this is derived from.
Katara, you're like, wasting our time.
Because a girl wants something.
Yeah. And then Toph is, like, quote-unquote, one of the boys enough that they're like, because she included them in her shenanigans with scamming everybody. So then they were down with that.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got there. She literally bribed Sokka into it. She literally bribed him to be okay with it.
That's true.
Get yourself something pretty. Like,
get yourself something pretty.
That's what she did.
Some of these old-timey lines just kill me. Baby, you're my forever girl. You know, like, if Clark Gable said that, you know, like, one of those people, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably like if my dad heard that, he'd be like, oh, this famous actor, you know, said this in this movie. I'd be like, thanks for the fun fact, dad.
My dad would be like, so, which actor said this in a movie? And I'd be like, I don't know, dad. I don't know. How will you expect me to know that? And he's like, I'll give you a hint. He was also in a movie with another actress that you've also seen in something else, but you haven't seen the original movie I'm talking about or the second one.
I literally can't.
My last, like, thing about this episode, I, like, forgot that, like, the guru comes back, like,
that was a fun cameo.
In the dream, yeah, and I was just, like, I was, like, not expecting it at all, and if I was drinking, like, at that time, I would have spat it out, because it was so bizarre and funny. Like, Miko and I were just, like, this feels wrong, but, like, it's hilarious. I don't know. Like, he had, like, all the extra arms and stuff.
Yeah.
I was thinking that, similar to how we talk about how the characters perceive things differently than we do as the audience, because we have more information than they do. I thought it was fun how Aang's nightmare included Zuko as, like, you know, the bad guy that is chasing them still.
Yeah.
Because that's accurate. The last time they saw him, pretty much. You know, he's the bad guy. Although I was a little bit like, Aang, why do you know what Zuko's Agni Kai clothes from season 1, episode 3 look like? But whatever.
I also was like, oh, interesting that it's season 1 Zuko. Because that was, like, the time that he was really chasing them.
Because that was the scary Zuko. That was the most scary Zuko to them. But, you know, it's kind of fun that that is coming in this episode. At the same time as in the B-plot, Zuko is finally having this epiphany with the culmination of all the uncle telling him, like, to think about who he really is, what he really wants, etc., etc. And knowing, basically, as we do, that he's finally gonna go try to join the gang. It's like a fun little reminder that, like, by the way, the gang still thinks that he's definitely evil. Like,
yeah,
he still features heavily in their nightmares at this point.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh man, looking forward to that.
Like, actually, I'm very much looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking it's, like, here, and then I, like, forget. I'm like, oh, there's still a whole fucking, like, fight we have to watch.
Yeah.
There's still a whole, like, goddamn, like, mid-season finale going on here.
Yeah.
Yes. This is how we should start talking about them. Season 3A, season 3B.
Like, actually.
Anyway, was there anything else that people wanted to talk about?
Nope.
Okay, cool. So, wrapping up, I'm gonna start with saying that you know, the honor count, as mentioned earlier, did not go up, although I will say that I think Zuko has finally realized that maybe he is responsible for his own honor, so good for you, Zuko. Related to that, my personal favorite moment of the episode, even though I said it was Appa standing, I did write down that it was Zuko's disquiet after emerging from the meeting, when he came out and he was just very, like,
yeah,
quiet, blank face. And then Mei was trying to talk to him, and he was just like, it was, you know,
I did the thing. And I was just like, oh, like, you know, especially when it was followed by that final line of his where he's saying, like, it wasn't me. I was like, what a satisfying moment for us, the audience, who's been waiting for this for 2.5 seasons. Mm-hmm. But yeah, shout out to Appa standing next to them in the hallucination. That was beautiful. I loved it.
Yeah. It's hard for me to pick a favorite moment in this episode because, like, that whole sequence with them fighting a samurai was iconic. But also, yeah, it's, like, all the stuff we talked about and, like, that prompted all the conversations that we had were, like, nice, too.
My favorite line was one of Aang's where they were like, so are you feeling better? And he said, I kind of think I sort of might slightly feel a little better. And I was like,
maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. The end of it.
And I was like, why is that the relatable. Most relatable line?
Really? Yeah, is. Actually, that might be it.
A long-winded yeah. No, yeah. Basically.
I feel like we didn't actually, like, talk about it at all, but I did really like the scene with Azula and Zuko when she's getting her hair brushed, because I like that because it's kind of open to interpretation of if she legitimately is, like, fucking with him or if she's just like, this is so below me, I don't fucking care. Like,
yeah.
Whatever I say, he's gonna overthink it anyway, so, like, he'll spiral all by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that for her.
I feel like Azula is kind of trying to help Zuko, but she can't stop herself from fucking with him while she does it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I love the energy. It was so chaotic, even though it was, like, a very chill, like, whatever moment.
I loved that she was like, well, maybe they just didn't invite you because you're the prince and it's obvious that you're going to go. She was like, well, were you invited? Like, she's like, of course, I'm the princess.
Of course.
I think my favorite part was the Aang Katara hallucination where he kissed her, because it's just cute knowing that that still brings him anxiety amongst other things.
Yeah.
You know, like, the anxiety of confessing to someone, I think, is still cute and relatable for someone his age, and no matter what age you are. So it's not just the weight of the world on his shoulders, it's also just, like, little cute crushes that you can't, like, bring yourself the courage to admit that to them that you like them.
All right. Our other usual question is MVPs. My MVP was Zuko for finally taking that first step in his self-actualization. I know I just keep on saying the same thing about Zuko this episode, but hey, it was a big deal.
Mine's Aang because I'm obvious.
I guess I also picked Aang because I was like, well, he really went through it. Like, that's really...
He's never
I know that's true, though.
And his friends were not helpful.
They tried.
They did try. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, I was torn between, like, making MVP just generally the gang because they were doing their best efforts with the skills that they had at the time. But it seems like Zuko has fully come to the realization just based on the things that you said, because I don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. He's kind of had the same kind of repetitive thing where it's like, I don't know if this is what I want. I've been living the life that I've always wanted, but I don't know if this is for me. But it seems like it's more final based on things that you said. So if that is the case, then Zuko is my MVP. Because now it's kind of
he's
just like
Zuko,
the path
asterisk.
Moving forward. Yeah. I may retract this in the future if he brings it up again.
I guess we'll find out.
Oh, buddy. I mean, yo, when you're talking about the gang, like, doing their best, this reminds me that, not that it's really worthy of a big discussion, but we also didn't talk about May at all. I did think that as a parallel to what you said, May, the gang were trying with Aang and it wasn't really working. And I do think that May, she was trying with Zuko, but, like, they just don't understand each other.
Yeah.
I think she was really trying, but she doesn't really understand him.
Yeah.
And she couldn't really connect with him. And obviously his problem, especially as we find out eventually what actually happens in the meeting, a lot of his problem is also just that he has changed over his years of travels and all the people he met and everyone else in there, even, you know, Ozai, even Azula, even all the War Council, they're all still sort of stuck back on this base one level of, like, Fire Nation educational system view of the world. And Zuko is different than them now.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I did think that. I was like, she really was trying her best, but they just are, like, two very different people at the moment. Yeah.
She was trying, but she kept saying the wrong things.
Classic teenager.
Okay. Anyway, this has been Pod Sing Say, an Avatar The Last Airbender podcast. Thank you for listening, and join us again next week when we will be discussing Book 3, Chapter 10, The Day of Black Sun, Part 1. If you enjoy Pod Sing Say, please shoot us a rating on all your favorite podcast platforms. And don't forget to subscribe. Until next time, peace.